Welcome back to Logical with Ludmila, where we untangle the legal knots so that you don't have to. I'm Ludmila Yamalova, a U.S. qualified lawyer based in Dubai. In each episode, we break down complex law into clear, practical insights that you can actually use. Today's topic is employment. Employment in the context of current regional and geopolitical developments and challenges that are impacting employment relationships in the UAE first and foremost. So the reality is that the region is currently experiencing a period of heightened geopolitical tension, including the ongoing, that basically stems from the ongoing US and Iran conflict, which has already had direct and indirect implications across the Gulf. So in recent weeks alone, the UAE has seen airspace disruptions and temporary airport closures, drone and missile interceptions within the territory, and disruptions to its oil, shipping, and logistical infrastructure. At a broader level, the conflict has driven oil prices sharply upward, disrupted global supply chains and trade routes, and particularly through the Strait of Hormuz, and obviously created a lot of volatility across financial markets and other markets. So these developments, as we all know, are not theoretical. They're already translating into real economic impact. In the UAE specifically, key sectors are feeling the strain, including tourism and hospitality, with declining bookings and many cancellations, aviation and travel due to airspace instability, logistics and international trade due to shipping disruptions, and events, retail, and F&B driven by reduced consumer activity. In response, we've seen recently the UAE government has even introduced economic support measures, including a billion dirham relief package to support affected businesses. Despite these challenges, companies are making, or despite these challenges and these sort of economic measures, I mean, we know that companies are making less money, or in some cases, no money at all. Yet their legal and financial obligations, for the most part, remain the same. And that in particular includes salaries, rent, supplier payments, and all sorts of loan obligations. And the tension is now playing out most visibly in employment relationships. On the ground, what we're seeing is employees are being placed on unpaid leave, or they're being forced to take annual leave. They're being asked to continue working without pay or simply not being paid at all. Most importantly, in a lot of cases, these arrangements are not documented and in most cases, they're not agreed on either, and sometimes not even clearly communicated. This obviously raises many important questions, and for both employees and employers, you know, so what is legally allowed, what options exist, and how should these situations be managed from both sides, from the employees and from employers' perspective. But obviously, the side of the employees is a lot more affected, because they are in this context, they're a weaker party, because they are very much dependent on their monthly salaries. So generally speaking, in the context of employment, employees are deemed to be a weaker party. There are four times like this, they are the ones who are getting affected most. So from the perspective of just to understand what options exist from, in particular, for employees that are being affected by that, but also ultimately we'll discuss what companies can do or employers can do under these circumstances, because as we discussed, the circumstances are real, the challenges are real for both parties, and in many ways are equally difficult for both. So what are the options that exist in the UAE as per the UAE law? So that's before we go into the specific practical options and examples, let's talk about the legal framework. So in this particular context, what we're talking about is the employment relationship. So in the UAE, we've got kind of two employment sectors. You've got the private sector and you've got the public sector. So in the private sector, it's the law that governs the private sector throughout the UAE. So it's not just in specific emirate, it's across, with a few exceptions, is the Federal Decree Law Number 33 of 2021. one, which is generally referred to as the UAE labor law. And then it has a number of resolutions, the most notable one, which is the cabinet resolution number one of 2022, which is called the executive regulation. So it's these sort of two laws or two documents that are read and should be read together to set up the foundation of the UAE employment law. And then that's for the private sector, as I mentioned earlier, in the UAE in general, so across different emirates, except there are, in addition to these two laws, this basically federal employment law, there's two specific free zones that have their own employment law, and that's in the DIFC in the Dubai Financial Center. They have their own employment law in Abu Dhabi, the ADGM. Now, Abu Dhabi Global Markets, they also have their own employment law. So in a private sector, we've got three different laws. We've got the UAE federal labor law, and then we've got the DFC law and employment law, and we have the ADGM employment law. So from the perspective of employment in the private sector, these are the three sources of law that would apply in the context of these perhaps challenges and ultimately parties, I guess, allegations of a breach of contract. And the breach of contract will be, or a breach of contract, the breach of their obligations, they would be subject to the interpretation of not just the contracts, but the laws, the legal laws, which will depend on where the parties are based. And it will be one of these three sources of law that applies to the private sector. Then there's also the federal, the public sector, and that's that has subject to its own laws, and that's the federal decree law number 49 of 2022, which is otherwise called kind of the human resources law. And plus there's a number of kind of emirate level HR frameworks that exist for specific public sectors. So from the legal standpoint, the legal foundation are these, you know, these basic sources of employment laws, private sector, public sector, but in whichever the source is, whichever the sector is, so they are subject to specific laws. And generally speaking, the laws, in some of the most sort of substantive terms, the laws are very similar, or the protections and the rights and obligations are more or less similar. One of which, and the most important one, and that's the payment of wages, right? So the key principle in employment is the payment of wages. So salary payment is a fundamental and mandatory obligation. So otherwise, who would work without pay? There are other ways people wanted to provide services, you know, but that's not called an employment relationship. It could be a partnership, an investment arrangement, but not employment. Kind of by way of an example, for the UAE labor law, the specific Article 13 that talks about or sets out employers' obligation to pay wages, and not just to pay wages, but also to pay wages on time. And then also there's, depending on kind of where the businesses are based, so the wages have to also be paid with not just as per the contract and on time, but also through what's called the wage protection system. So that's just one example, but whether you're talking the private sector or the public sector, payment of wages is the primary obligation from the perspective of the companies. Payment of wages, payment of full wages as well, not partial wages, and timely payment of wages. So again, it all kind of relates to the concept of payment of wages, but it's all basically has those at least three elements. One is the wages themselves, two is the amount, and three is the timing. And then, you know, the fourth, potentially, depending on where you are, is the form in which you pay, whether it's through WPS or some other form. And therefore, from a legal standpoint, the failure to pay is nothing short of a breach of contract. And that's just because it's the basic obligation of the employer. And so that's a breach of contract that obviously triggers then penalties and claims. Now, when we're talking about the breach of contract, so let's kind of take a step back and think about there's a contract, right? And so every employment relationship is subject to an employment contract. So depending, as we've said before, whether it's a private sector or a public sector, and within the private sector, depending on which zone you're in and which economic zone, which free zone you are in. So the employment contract is different, and same with the public sector. So, but in any case, in each one of these relationships, there's always an employment contract. Sometimes, often these days in particular, because the UAE has relaxed a lot of their employment contracts. regulations is like sometimes companies, the employment contracts would even be oral, so they don't necessarily formalized, and they're also valid. But one way or the other is always an employment contract. And the two, two most basic elements of an employment relationship is the employee provides services and the company pays. So this is kind of a mutuality of obligations. So there are four in when we're talking about the, in the context of the current challenges, and in particular the companies either delaying payments of salaries, not paying salaries at all, or reducing the salary payments, or trying to sort of, or kind of changing the nature of the relationship, whatever it may be, it all comes down to the employment agreement, which ultimately means if the companies are doing that without the agreement of the employees, they are breaching the agreement. Whatever the agreement may be, that each one of these examples is as an example of a breach of an agreement by the company. So if the company is paying partial salary, that's a breach of the agreement. If the company is paying delay salary, that's a breach of the agreement. If the company is paying, is not paying, that's a breach of the agreement. If the company is now trying to change the terms of the agreement, that's a breach of the agreement, right? So each one of them is a breach unless, right? Unless the parties agree. But first, it's really important to understand just because the companies, the companies are not able to pay, that doesn't necessarily need to lead to the breakdown of the relationship. But equally so, it doesn't mean because like, as a company, you can't pay. So you're just like, okay, well, you should just understand and work for me for free, or you should just understand and expect your salary later, or you should just understand and go home and not get paid. That's not correct, because each one of those examples amounts to or constitutes a breach of employer's obligation under different sort of theories and different provisions, and not just the contract but the law. Even if the contract itself does not provide for it, there's plenty of provisions in these laws that I've discussed that clearly set out as each one of those as employer's obligation. So therefore, if the employer, the company, wants to change any of it, it has to be with the agreement of the employee. In other words, you cannot, as a company, you cannot unilaterally impose these changes, because each one of them is a change, each one of them, and as a change, it means it's a change to the employment agreement. And the agreement cannot be changed unilaterally. It cannot be changed by one side. So you do need to have a consent of the employees. So now let's talk about consent, because consent can come into different forms. So consent can be expressed, or it can be implied, and this is where the big difference comes in. So the express consent is basically any kind of an agreement and any sort of undertaking that piece of paper that's written between the parties where they agree to amending the terms, and so that's an express consent, and we can talk about it shortly. And the implied consent is just by action or inaction. So for example, as a company, I pay you half of your salary, and you say nothing, and you don't object to it, and you accept, and you just and sort of we carry on. So that would be an example of an implied consent. So in a way, that could be argued that you have accepted the amended terms or the changed terms of our agreement. So now that's a kind of a difficult, different topic, and it's very case by case specific. And it's a fairly high threshold in order for the company to prove that somehow the employee implicitly agreed to receiving a lesser salary. And there's a number of elements involved in terms of the duration, the party's circumstances, or respective sort of bargaining positions and such. And so ultimately will be up to the courts to decide. But generally speaking, it's possible to argue implied consent, but under the current circumstances, perhaps it will be sort of less common to not just argue, but kind of for companies to prevail on that argument in the courts should that happen. That being said, it's important to talk about it, because I do want to raise it to the attention of the employees, so that just because you think that and you sympathize with your company that they are not able to make enough money, and therefore you should be accepting, and you're happy to accept half the salary does not necessarily mean that you should just accept it without any kind of documentation. And so whatever it is, basically you should not accept this by implied means. If you agree, then you should document it one way or the other. So as an employee, my recommendation is just never just by your actions or inactions accept, you know, change to this relationship, because you're shortchanging yourself by being able to kind of stand up and fight for your rights. So now let's go back to the express amendments. So the express amendment is what? It's basically when you are when the employer says, I cannot pay you, so therefore I either please go home on unpaid leave, or I can only pay you half, whatever it may be. And we can talk about the specific sort of examples and tools that also companies and employees may have to work through these sort of challenging times, whatever it may be, but it should be documented. And it should be documented in many different ways. And it depends on sort of what ultimately you agree on, but it should be sort of very clear terms, kind of defined duration, detailed and sufficiently enough to kind of be helpful to the parties. And by the way, so in terms of when we're talking about the implied consent, so the one thing that sort of principle has been established in the UAE courts kind of over and over again, that the non-payment of salary can never be deemed as consent. So for example, let's say an employee, you continue to come to the office and you haven't gotten paid for a whole year. Then that's, you know, the courts will never deem that as a consent to just basically get paid. So that's an example of where that would not, just getting sort of going to work and not getting paid for a year will not be deemed as an implied consent to work for free. But if you're getting paid, let's say half of your salary for a whole year and you haven't raised any issues, in that case, the courts may reasonably deem that you have accepted these amended terms. So in terms of, you know, what is what's acceptable, or what the courts will deem as implied consent, really depends, as I mentioned earlier, kind of on a specific case, but also the duration. The duration of time is an important element here, because let's say, if you, especially under specific current circumstances, if you haven't been paid for 3 months, or you've been only paid partial salary for 3 months, that's not going to be deemed as your implied consent for your salary to be reduced by that amount. In most cases, courts in particular, they understand, because as I mentioned earlier, employees in this context are deemed to be a weaker party. So in many cases, courts understand that it's not really, the employees are not in the position to object or to raise these concerns to the companies, because they're afraid to lose their job altogether. But just because they've been, let's say, accepting partial payment, so that does not necessarily mean that they've agreed for that to be their new salary. Now let's talk about what kind of examples we have seen so far in terms of the employment context in light of the recent sort of challenges, geopolitical challenges, and some of the things that the companies in particular are doing, you know, based on what we're learning from the employees. And that's, you know, so. One example, as I mentioned earlier, it's, well, the salaries are being cut by half, or, you know, it's some kind of reduced salary. So that's one example, right? The other one is that they're being sent on unpaid leave, kind of against their will, if you will. Or sometimes they're being forced to take their paid leave or use up their leave. And then other times they may be also forced, encouraged to take not just their leave, but also perhaps even end of service entitlements. And we have seen this as well, or being basically expected to come to the office and work, but not get paid at all. Another example is where just they get paid, getting paid late. in any one of these circumstances, again, as I mentioned earlier, from the business perspective, it may be understandable why this is happening. So the companies are suffering financially. As I say that, it's also important, and this is why the employees are usually deemed to be a weaker party. The companies need to be reminded the payment of salaries is a priority obligation. So in other words, employees are priority creditors. So that means that in their whole pool of invoices, receipts, and payment obligations that companies and businesses need to make, the employees have to be at the top. So they're priority. What we often see in the industries and in the country is that companies are all too quick to pay all the other obligations, to senior management, dividends, and to other suppliers, service providers, but not to their employees. So, as I mentioned earlier, because of this sort of inequality of bargaining power between employers and employees, and that's also reflected in the employment laws in the UAE, employees are treated as priority creditors. So in these kinds of financial challenges, it's important for the companies to remember that their first obligation is the employees, and everybody else, kind of legally speaking, falls under it. So before they decide to shortchange their employees, they should look at their overall obligations and remember that there is a priority and categorization of creditors, and they should choose their financial obligations and adjustments of their financial obligations on that basis. So employees, in other words, need to be paid first. There's another element to it, is that often what we see is that it's the lower paid employees that get shortchanged first. The management still continues to get paid, the partners get paid, and it's sort of the lower paying employees, again, even the weaker within the pool of employees, of the weaker being the weaker parties. There's also obviously there is a hierarchy there too, and so within that kind of a group of employees, we unfortunately see that a lot of those kind of lower paying employees find themselves on the forefront and bear the brunt of these kind of financial penalties first, which is unfortunate because they're the ones, in fact, who need most money because they really live from paycheck to paycheck. One, and two, arguably, they are the ones actually whose salaries companies should be able to afford because they are lower paying employees. But this is just me talking from the perspective of a lawyer and also kind of business owner myself, and just general kind of practitioner and human. But unfortunately, often what we see is that still the higher paying employees and managers will continue to get paid, and it's the lower paying employees that will be deprived of their salaries first. We're talking about this, right? So the idea here is that from a company's perspective, we also need to, I want to be fair because I also run a business. So it's not just all about employees, right? I mean, I wear both hats. A company can genuinely face serious problems. And we all hopeful. I've been in the UAE for a very long time, and I know beyond doubt that this is going to be behind us soon enough. I've been through a number of cycles over my last 18 years in the UAE. So I have full and utmost faith in this country's ability to overcome these particular difficulties. But we are here now. In the meantime, these challenges are real, and businesses are suffering, and we will suffer. Even perhaps as a law firm, anticipate we also may suffer, and a lot of these issues that I'm discussing here may also, I may also have to kind of experience and process myself. So this is all very real. I don't want to take one side over the other. It's just, as I mentioned earlier, because employees are deemed to a weaker party, they usually find themselves in more difficult situation. So in other words, both sides can have valid positions, right? And from both, because the employees need money and employers, if you, you know, as if you use a few examples, if you are in a specific business industry and your whole model is based on tourism and now you have no tourism, where do you get the money? Your obligations, you still have obligations. A lot of these companies are also based on debt. So you still have banking obligations, you know, all sorts of other loans and mortgages and rent and supplier obligations and so on and so forth. So and now you have no revenue stream because tourism for the time being has paused, for example. So where do you get the money? How do you make things work? That being said, there may also be ability to make some kind of money or to pivot or generate a different type of business. So you still need employees to work, right? So there's different arrangements. So, but I guess the moral of the story is a company, if you have no ability to pay your employees, you have no legal or moral right to expect for the employees to work for free. So that should not be an expectation. And therefore, from the employee standpoint, you don't need to continue to work for the company and show up to work for free, because legally you're not required to do so. As I said earlier, it's the law protects you very clearly. And that's so that's, you know, you should not feel bad. So your option as an employee, what are your options as an employee? If the company stops paying you, you can resign. And you can resign without notice. What's called, you can resign without notice, because you have a right to resign without notice, but you will be entitled to all of your other entitlements otherwise, because ultimately you're not the one that's breached the agreement, that the company is breaching the agreement. So you don't need to be afraid to continue to come to work and not get paid. You don't need to worry about you resigning or working during the notice period but not getting paid because you worry about this notice period, because you're not required to work during your notice period, or you work out your notice period if the company has breached its fundamental obligation being your salary. So therefore, if the company is not paying your salary, you can resign immediately and not be obligated to serve the notice, and yet the company is still obligated to pay you whatever it is that you have, the salaries from before and the end of service entitlements and your unpaid leave and all the other entitlements that they would otherwise have to pay. So that's from the employee's standpoint. That's one of the options, is you can basically resign. Now the other option, if you are one of those employees who understands and believes in your company's business, and you trust the company, I guess your managers, your bosses. And you believe, and you may also have other reasons to kind of linger on, because you think, well, okay, this will pass, and they will obviously make it right and make do when this storm passes. That's great, and that's, you know, that's admirable, and you know, more power to you or for the company to have employees like you. But whatever it is, if you decide, in other words, to continue to work for the company for free, make sure that this is a specific example where you document that. So where you have this amendment to your agreement, and that's the express consent that I talked about, the express amendment to the terms of your agreement, that's clearly documented. So let's talk about this. So what would that be? Basically, it would be an amendment to your agreement. Now, it doesn't need to be formal. You don't need to go to lawyers and have this drafted. It doesn't need to be registered anywhere. It can just literally be written even by hand, as long as you have proof of it and, you know, and it's clearly sort of documented that, okay, you agreed, you understand the company's challenges and you sympathize and you have agreed for a certain period of time to basically continue to come to work and not get paid, but on the expectation that the company still owes you money for each one of those days of you working, and the company will pay you that when the time is right, or in any event, that it will still, the obligation remains. And so you're not working for free, and you're not working on some reduced payment, for example. And also you should define the term, like how long are you planning, or are you willing, or you can afford to work without getting paid. And then ultimately, what will be the remedies? So in the event, when the situation improves, or in the event the situation does not improve with your company. So all these things need to be very clearly documented. Again, it can be written very, very simple terms. But for example, let's use a specific example. So let's say I understand the company's position, and so, you know, I and you also need to have make that sort of your personal determination. How long can you work? Can you afford to work for the company for free? I understand people still are worried to lose a job, but remember, it's not really a job if you don't get paid. So, but you may still think, okay, we'll take 2-3 months. So you need to make your own decision, personal decision, how long you think you A, can afford to live without getting paid, and then B, believe that it's sort of sustainable, you know, for company to kind of turn the corner. And so based on your determination, you include that in that agreement. And you say, let's say an employee, I agree to work for the next 3 months sort of without pay, it's not without pay, it's a delayed payment, right? The company still owes me a payment for each one of these months, but I agree to for the company to pay me at the end of these, let's say, 3 months. And after these 3 months, the company is required to pay me the full salary. If they don't, my options are what? You know, I will either go to court and seek repayment of all of these funds, we can renegotiate, or, you know, I walk away whatever it is that you are willing to do, right? Sometimes, by the way, there's a lot of creative arrangements. You know, the company can offer some employees shares or interest in the company, right? Just got to be partners. Whatever it is that you may agree between the employee and the company, it needs to be documented is the moral of the story. And one of the things I also recommend is that, let's say as an employee, if you're documenting something like this, also include the provision that in the event you have to enforce this amendment, right? In other words, you have to ultimately go to a court to argue this, that the company should be responsible for your legal fees, right? Because let's say this agreement, you may have the agreement and it could be clearly drafted for the purposes of being enforceable. And, you know, and the company may even believe and sort of signs it in good faith, but 3 months from now, they're not able to comply with it. You as an employee, you still have a right and you still are an affected party. You may want to try to enforce this agreement. So if you go and enforce the agreement, you'll go to court, you need to pay money, la, 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 la. So, but you can, if you include a provision in that agreement that in the event of the breach of this agreement and you need to enforce it, that the company, in addition to paying all the obligations as per the agreement, also is obligated to compensate you for your legal fees, and you can even indicate what that amount should be, for example, just to make it easier, then do that, include that, because that will help you. And these days, courts actually do enforce those specific contractual provisions if there is a specific provision for the payment of legal fees. I'm not talking about court fees, because court fees you'll get anyway, but like the legal fees as well. So whatever it is you do, like, make that basically, that's kind of your roadmap for how you structure the amendment to your employment agreement, right? That's in the event, let's say you get paid, you don't get paid, the company is not able to pay you. Similarly, if, you know, some of the other arrangements that companies are doing is that they are only able to pay some percentage of your salary, whatever it may be, the same principles I discussed with the other arrangement, you should be documented. So you say, okay, fine, I will accept, let's say, 50% of my salary for the next X number of months. Again, you need to decide how long you can afford to work for half of your salary, and how realistically, you know, how many months or how much time the company will need to turn the corner, or for you to see whether they'll be able to turn the corner. So set a definitive amount. Don't just say, okay, a year, or don't just like, yeah, whenever things will get better, because things may take get better much, much, much longer, or they may never get better for the specific company. So, you know, don't leave it undefined. Always define, because you can always amend that specific time frame, but do not leave it just sort of whenever things get better. And once again, you go back to this. Okay, so the company will pay me half of the salary, but that's not me agreeing to a reduced salary. I'm just, for example, that's me agreeing to taking half the salary for the time being. The company still owes me the remainder of the salary for when things get better, for example. Or you could say, I understand during this period of time, next 3 months, I will take half the salary. When things improve, my salary will be reinstated. I will not necessarily be seeking compensation for the shortfall for the previous 3 months, but I will expect a full salary for the future months. So there's different ways of structuring these arrangements. And the point I'm trying to illustrate and give you some specific tools that it really depends on the parties, right? If you believe in your company and if they believe in you, then absolutely there are ways, and it makes sense from commercial standpoint, from professional standpoint, from human standpoint to work together. In a way, you become partners, right? So, but whatever it is you do, document. Do not be afraid to document. Even if you're a Meskin employee and you're just basically you're an office cleaner, but it doesn't mean that you cannot, the company cannot draft something for you. You can, these days with AI, it's so easy to draft any one of these documents. So just whatever it is, just document that, yes, I'm accepting to come to the office without pay for X number of months. But after that, I do expect for the salary to be paid to me. That's another example of, let's say, a delayed salary. And then other ways is, for example, it's sometimes companies say, listen, please take your leave. That's also an okay arrangement, because again, if you believe that the company is not able to pay you, because if they're not able to pay you and you'll say, I don't want to take my leave right now, what will the company do? It has the ability to terminate you. If they terminate you, then they will have to pay you for this unpaid leave, right? That's an obligation. So you're entitled to it, but you can kind of weather the storm sometimes by taking this leave. Or if the company says, well, I'm sorry, you either have the ability of kind of hunker down and wait things out for next month and use your paid leave, or we're going to have to terminate you. So it really depends, but basically the company can do that. And as an employee, it's up to you to decide, but if you don't accept it, you just need to expect that they will terminate you. And then at that point, your options are going to be limited. Another scenario is when companies ask employees to just go on unpaid leave. That's another scenario. Again, it can be workable, because we've seen this during COVID, for a lot of airline, the pilots and hostesses and such, and for F&B, and it worked. For X number of months, they were on unpaid leave. And when the industry sort of recovered, they were being brought back into the workforce. So that's also possible. But again, it's up to you and you as an employee and the company to make that, to make that a decision whether that makes sense. But whatever it is that you decide, it should once again be documented. So if you are agreeing on going on unpaid leave, then you should document it, what that means. And it's unpaid leave. It's going to be for X number of months. It's just, and then as a company, you also may want to decide, well, it's unpaid leave. Is that going to be counted or used towards the end of service term or not? I mean, these are very flexible terms. And this is another way for companies, for example, to try to make things, to soften things for the employees. And so, listen, we're sending you off on unpaid leave. However long this unpaid leave may be, we will count this time towards your calculation of end of service, right? So that's a kind of a give and take that's available, a chip that the company can offer for employees as an incentive to encourage them to go on unpaid leave, but at the same time, they're still earning something, at least the time for towards their end of service. So other ways is the end of service entitlements. And, that's by law, as an employee, you're entitled to it, right? So if you leave the company, you're going to get that paid. And so sometimes companies it may be in the interest of the companies, may be in the interest of employees, is to agree, listen, okay, I've worked for the company for 5 years. I've got a bunch of end of service. So I believe in the company still. I want to stay, but I want to help. And so, but I cannot live for the next 5 months without a payment, without a salary. But I have this end of service, so why don't you pay me for the next month out of my end of service, and we will just document an agreement that my end of service is being taken out. That's also possible. Like, why not, right? It's in a way, there's so many valuable employees who have been with companies for so long and their end of service is so high, but for them to benefit from it, like, they have to leave the company, this valuable company that they love so much, and for the company, this valuable employee that they want, they love so much as well. So in order for them to make it to benefit, so it's almost like the employee has to, valuable employee has to leave. So this is an example of perhaps this is a matter for discussion. It could be possible because the company's obligation to pay end of service will always be there, will always remain. That now, especially under the new laws, can never go away. So therefore, that's still the company's obligation. So if you got any kind of pot of money, that's an example for you, a tool for you as a company to be able to help your employee along the way, maybe not pay them salary now, but still settle your other obligation to that same employee during this period of time and see if, you know, next 3, 5, whatever months, you can turn the corner. And if you don't turn the corner, at least you've already paid off that, you know, that other obligation to the employee, which you will still need to pay. And theoretically, you should have been accruing for. So that's kind of, that's another way of doing these arrangements. So, you know, but whatever, there's a lot of different types of employment terms and conditions that between the two parties that, you know, they can mutually agree on. So the point is, as an employee, you should not expect the company can just impose on you sort of a change of terms, right? You don't need to accept it if it doesn't work. Now, if it works for you, I mean, you should not be afraid to have the discussion with the company and tell them what works, what doesn't work. And whatever it is you agree on, you should memorialize it. So that's basically kind of the takeaway from this discussion. And just remember that as an employee, your rights are protected. They are protected by law, different types of laws. And so you don't need to worry. You don't need to be scared to pursue your obligation. So let's say, what if you're one of those employees who the company, you cannot negotiate with the company, you cannot agree with them, but you know that they owe you at least, in the very least, your end of service for the last, let's say, 3 years. Don't be afraid to go to court and at least file a case again for that, because the longer you take, the less money the company will potentially have to even pay you end of service. Not that that's an excuse, but still. So the idea here is that don't be afraid to stand up for your rights as an employee, because you are the weaker party here. So the company should have been accruing for the end of service. They should have been accrued for your annual pay and so on and so forth. So if the company does not collaborate with you or does not cooperate and does not come up with sort of a workable solution for you, don't be afraid to resign and assert your rights in the courts, because the law does protect you. So that's in terms of the employment, existing employment relationship. And then there's another element to the employment discussion, and that's and we've seen a flurry of questions related to this, and that's with regards to job offers. So this is not necessarily an existing employment relationship between the two existing parties. It's you know, it's a relationship that's about to start. It was initiated, but has not quite developed into a full employment relationship yet. So it's job offers. What we have seen recently is a flurry of clients coming forward. I resigned from that company, and I had an offer for this new company, or, you know, I accepted this offer. I sort of made my life choices on the basis of this offer. So, and now they withdrew it because of what's going on. What can I do? So now that is still a contract. And this is important to understand. A job offer is a contract. And therefore, if the company rescinds the contract or decides to sort of not follow through with the contract, it is still a breach of contract. Now, what contract it is that's the matter of, so that's kind of nuts and bolts of what are the terms of that contract? And the terms of the contract, because it's an employment contract, right? It's not necessarily subject to the employment law, because you don't have an employment, it's a job offer, but it's not a full employment relationship yet. Therefore, you can't quite tap into the employment law for the interpretation of that specific contract. But the job offer has the elements that are outline in that contract. So it will be so the breach of that specific contract that you signed. So it depends on what's in the contract. So let's say, but I'll tell you from experience, most of these contracts are not super detailed. So it's not like there will be a provision in the contract that says, well, if the company withdraws, it pays me X amount. That we have yet to see that. So in most cases, in all cases, you have a contract that you can take to court and you can argue. However, what are you arguing for? What are you claiming is the big question. So because with employment, you ultimately, I mean, with a breach of contract, you need to be able to claim an amount for damages. And the damages have to still comport with what the law supports or provides. And so in the breach of contract, it's whatever you have suffered as a result of basically this kind of a breach. And in most cases, it's, you know, under this is kind of the under the employment law, it's, you know, the most in your position as a new employee you'd be entitled to is the salary that you would have not received. But as a new employee, you don't have a salary yet. You're not entitled to a notice period yet. You're not entitled to end of service. So in practical terms, well, in legal terms, you can file a case and you can claim damages. But in practical terms, it's very difficult to establish what those damages are unless, for example, you can show, listen, on the back of this, I had a salary of $10,000. I was receiving for the last 10 years. You know, I accepted your offer. I've given up all that. So I'm losing this. But even then, if from the court's perspective, it's difficult because there is nothing in the law to help calculate that. So for how long? Okay, fine, you give up your 10,000 dirham salary, but for how long is this company should pay you that salary? It reverts back to the employment law, and the law employment law allows maximum of the sort of salary, you know, 1 month notice and end of service. So at most, they'll probably pay you like 1 month salary. So in practical terms, it's difficult to justify going to court to claim compensation. Unless your agreement is more specific and you can point to other damages that you would have suffered directly as a result of that breach of contract. But equally so, the company here may have a defense. And defense, it could be force majeure, for example, is that they are absolutely not in a position to perform the contract because of, let's say, the industry they're involved in, and they're affected by, you know, let's say, an event of force majeure because it's impossible for them to perform. So you also need to be mindful of even if you have, let's say you're like an oil trader, right? And so your damages, you can substantiate pretty hefty damages by virtue of the breach of the agreement by the company of withdrawing your employment contract, because you can show like what it took for you to negotiate this contract, what you expected, what you gave up. Sometimes, for example, you know, in these offer letters, you say, listen, I'm coming to you, but by virtue of coming to you, I've given up, let's say, a bonus that I would have received from my previous company for the last year to the tune of 1 million dirhams. So I'm coming to you, but that 1 million dirham that I'm leaving on the table, you have to pay me. So we have seen contracts like that. And so in that case, you could justifiably file a case against you, as that would be your damages. But also, if you are one of those, then remember the company may also have a defense to those damages on the basis that they are just not able to perform their obligation, i.e. hire you because of the industry they're in, they're affected by this event of force majeure. So it's a kind of a more complex legal discussion, but certainly the options are there. So in summary, in terms of the offer letters, legally speaking, yes, there is, you have a right to do it. And the law sort of exists for you to kind of to rely on to support that position. But from a practical standpoint, you need to make sure that you have justifiable actual damages that you can prove to the court. Because when you do go to the court, you need to be able to justify what it is. You need to assert what it is you're asking, and you need to be able to justify and support it. And so it cannot be just some speculative, you know, I would have been a better, you know, a much better person living in the better conditions. It has to be very, very sort of defined and substantiated. So if you don't have that, it's in practical terms, it's not worth your while to go to court to sue the company for breach of the offer letter. So that's basically kind of in conclusion, as we've discussed, there's no doubt that the businesses are under some real pressure, and the legal framework in the UAE remains, you know, very clear for employment relationships still. So work must be paid. The contracts cannot be changed unilaterally. salary obligations cannot be suspended informally, and at the same time, employees and employers are navigating real challenges. So, you know, to work together, you know, communicate early, document everything clearly, and structure your arrangements legally and sort of in a way that's understandable to both parties and makes sense commercially. Because in times like this, you know, the real risk is not the crisis, it is, you know, how you respond to it. That's all for this episode of Logical with Ludmila. If you found this episode useful and you like what we do, you can always find more on our website, that is lylawyers.com. We're also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And for the full experience, you can watch our video podcast on YouTube. Until next time, stay informed, stay safe, and keep things logical.